Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the April 24, 2016 session, focusing on John chapter 13, verses 31 through 35, Icky Gross Love. I'm David Cassidy, and I'm joined for this episode by our good friends Daniel Glaze, Nikki Hardiman, and Aaron Hall. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Doing good.
Aaron, it's good to have you back with us.
Thanks.
We hope you're enjoying our podcast, and if you are, I'd like to ask if you're willing to drop by iTunes and leave us a review, hopefully a good one, but we would love to have you post a review for us. A lot of times the hard part is just finding your way to the proper place, so what we've done is if you go to the faithelement.net/podcasts page, there's actually a picture, you know, our cover art for the Faith Element podcast. If you click on that, it'll take you straight to the place on iTunes where you can leave a comment, and we hope you'll take a moment to do that. All right. Well, Daniel, can you give us an introduction for today's text?
Sure. This section of John's gospel that we're talking about today needs a little context first. Jesus has just washed his disciples' feet at the Last Supper, and he's identified one of their own as his betrayer. The section beginning with today's text is often called Jesus' farewell discourses. It's his last will and testament, if you will, what he wants to leave behind. The last word he wants to give to his disciples is love. It's all about love. "I give you a new commandment," Jesus says, "that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you should also love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another." I don't know about you, but all this sounds so simple. Just love one another. It's simple, right? I don't have to think about my love for my wife and my children. I just love them. So why are Jesus' words so hard here? Why is it that we cannot seem to love one another some 2,000 years later? When we look to presidential politics, to the destruction wrought by terrorism, you're not crazy if you think love is in short supply. But Jesus will not be moved. Love is the answer. If you have love for one another, folks will know that you follow me. That gives us something to think about. As I look upon the day I've had today, would a complete stranger tell from my behavior that I am one of Jesus' disciples? Would the man who cut me off on the interstate today, to whom I gave a very dirty look, would he know that I was Jesus' follower? Would my children, with whom I was very short when they wouldn't clear the table like I asked them, would they know I was Jesus' follower? By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. It sounds so simple, but it's not. If you have love for one another, folks will know that you follow me. It's all about love, Jesus says. That's a little background on our text for today.
That is just so beautiful. However, you lost me at foot washing. So Nikki and I have talked about foot washing before.
Yes, we have.
This has come up on our podcast, Glass Half Full. And we really have a good time talking about everything. Often comes out that Nikki is the better human because she likes the foot washing. But we go back and forth.
Not at all.
And we did have a conversation. I don't remember which podcast that was, but check that out on Glass Half Full. Do you think you could link that to this podcast?
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes.
And it's so beautiful that Jesus washed the disciples' feet, but it grosses me out.
I'm with you, Aaron. I'm with you.
I'm sure you've been a part of these type of services where we enact Jesus washing of feet. Is it you don't want to get your feet washed? You don't want to touch somebody's feet? What is it, Aaron?
It's gross. It's probably a beautiful embodied practice, whatever. It is gross. It's people's toes and out of their sweaty shoes. And I get it. I mean, there's some beauty to it or whatever, but there is grossness.
I like that there's some meaning to it or whatever.
I mean, surely Jesus had a point, but he had to get there by doing something gross.
I am the opposite. I love a good, dirty, gross foot washing. I really do. Like, I hate it when we do a foot washing and everybody has gone to get a pedicure before, you know, so everything's all clean afterwards. The water's still clean. My very first experience with a foot washing, I was in college and I was on a mission trip to Philadelphia. And we had all been out serving that day. And, you know, we were in like our chacos and tennis shoes. And we had been cleaning up different areas of town. And it was hot. And so then we came back and it was not planned. But somebody said, hey, let's do a foot washing. And I had never even really heard of this because we did not.
And then you slapped that person?
No. I didn't even know what they were talking about. Like, I grew up in a tradition. We didn't do things like that. So I was like, what's that? And so they told us, and there were probably 25 of us on this trip. And so when you're in college, then you have to, like, everybody has to wash everybody's foot. So I mm-hmm. really got irritated with the tediousness of it because it took forever.
Right.
But I'm here to tell you that water was gross at the end. I mean, it was so gross at the end of the night. But it was such an amazing and holy experience. And certainly, you know, there was the high of the mission trip and I was a college student and you're much, at least I think that I was much more sensitive to those kinds of things at that age. But ever since then, things like that have always been really meaningful to me. And I just think that it is such an embodiment of the incarnation, that caring for people in those kinds of ways becomes incredibly holy.
It is holy, and probably because it's so disgusting and gross. Well, I mean, I feel like there are other, like, I'm not the only, like, worst human ever. I feel like there are people listening, and David agrees with me, maybe.
I do. I'm there.
It's kind of icky. I have to tell you that, so we didn't grow up with foot washing, but the one time my youth minister way back tried to do this, he had like a washcloth that was like damp and we kind of patted each other's feet. So it was not the bowl of water you're talking about. But my sister served at a church, at a UCC church, and that was their tradition mm-hmm. to do every year during Holy Week. And she's worse than I am, totally grossed out by the whole thing. So they just kind of informed her, you know, duties as a side, you have to participate in this service. And she was like, I'm probably not gonna. And they said, you definitely are. And so they told her, well, just go and help us get things ready. Go get the basin. Well, the basin was not like a set-aside basin for the foot washing. They directed her to the fellowship hall underneath the cabinet where the big salad bowl for Wednesday night suppers was. And that is what they used for the foot washing. And she never ate salad again at that church. But I do. Okay, I get that it's holy. Why do you think it's holy? What is it about?
Well, I love
dirty,
like,
water.
Like, when you were talking about it, you said, "I'm sure Jesus was trying to make a point." And you know what? I'm not sure Jesus was trying to make a point. I think Jesus just saw something needed to be done, and so, like the leader that he was, he got up and did it. And then it had meaning. It became meaningful. But the truth was, in that day and age, you had to wash your feet when you went into somebody's house. Like, this was something that was done. It was very normal. There was always a person there to do it. And at this particular time, there wasn't. And so Jesus did it. He did what had to be done. And to me, that's what's holy. It was not, like, when we do it now, it's reenacting a ritual that we have created. But when Jesus did it, it literally had to be done. Just like every night I have to bathe my children. And in the mm-hmm. summer, I'm here to tell you that bath water gets as gross as that foot water in Philadelphia does. Because my mm-hmm. children run around barefoot outside and their feet are gross. And I bring them in and I'm like, I bathe them and the tub water is gross. I'm like, y'all got to stand up and rinse off in the shower because this is not working. Like, this is not getting you clean.
Right.
You know, and to me, caring for another human being in that way is so incredibly holy, because like my children, they are not at, well, my daughter can now, but they can't get themselves all the way clean. They need help with it. Mm-hmm. And I've been gifted with the opportunity to care for people who needed help bathing and going to the restroom and those kinds of things. And I'm not going to say like that it was easy and that I never kind of gagged a little because something was kind of went past my threshold. My threshold's pretty high for grossness. Like I can handle a lot of gross, but being able to help someone feel clean and whole and healthy, I think is at the heart of the incarnation. And I think that Jesus came to be among gross, dirty humans. And Jesus definitely became one of us. And his feet got dirty and his feet needed to be washed. Just like his disciples' feet needed to be washed. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just, for me, it is at the base of human existence to care for our bodies. And whether it's feeding children or bathing someone who's too incapable of bathing themselves. I don't know. There's just something really beautiful about that to me.
Yeah, I think so. I'm resonating a lot with what you're saying, Nikki. I don't want to misquote you. I think you said something about, I don't know that he had, that Jesus had this grand point. He simply did something that needed to be done.
Yeah.
It was inescapable that the disciples' feet were dusty and dirty, but I guess maybe there wasn't some grand theological point he was trying to make, but what is inescapable for me is that it was an incredible gesture of love.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, I'll give you, Aaron, that it may be icky gross love, but it was love nonetheless.
Right.
And that's really how I can't separate that from verse 34. Just as verse 34b, just as I have loved you, washing your feet, you also should love one another. I think for me, that foot washing event is tied to the love he has shown us and he commands us to have for others. I'm reminded of, it was some years ago, I had a pastoral intern here at the church. And I'm not going to remember the details exactly right, but there is a chronically homeless man nearby our church, a gentleman named Stanley. And Stanley has refused a lot of our help and has for years lived outside. And my intern that year, Chris was his name, decided he wanted to do something for Stanley. And he said, "What should I do?" And I said, "I don't know what you should do. What do you think you should do?" And so he took some of the money that he had earned and he asked Stanley what his shoe size was, and he got him some good shoes. And he helped Stanley change and a homeless person's shoes and socks. It was a difficult moment. But mm-hmm. he took off mm-hmm. his shoes, he took off his socks, put him on some clean white socks and these new shoes. And I said, "Chris, what was that like?" And he said, "I felt like I was washing his feet." Chris was evident. I don't want to say he was uncomfortable, but he embraced, this is not something I would normally do, but yet he felt called to do it. And I've always been impressed with that young man who, even though he was here for me to teach him, he taught me a lot, especially in that moment that sometimes love causes you to do some things you're not totally comfortable with, some things you might consider to be a little gross, but you do it out of love. And that's what I think Jesus is getting at here. It's all about mm-hmm. love.
And that love made him do uncomfortable things, but they brought comfort to someone else. I mean,
oh, yeah.
And Nikki, you did name that, you know, it was just something that needed to be done. But half the reason it needed to be done was because of social custom.
Mm-hmm.
And to, you know,
sure,
the things you guys are describing and bathing and giving new clothing is about bringing dignity in some way. And I'm remembering when I taught special ed. I taught in high school special ed, and we had students in wheelchairs and with some physical needs and things like that. And, you know, foot washing grosses me out, but toileting and bathing and helping them, that didn't bother me at all. And I remember helping a young girl get dressed and help her learn how to do her makeup and her hair for the friend's formal that we had. And we had a whole day where we showed her how to do all this kind of care. And I think when we're talking about people's bodies, people's needs for dignity, that is where it gets to the love part.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we were teasing that David and Aaron really kind of gross out at a foot washing. But, you know, I think that it's because in those moments, a lot of times it's really just about a ritual, which sometimes ritual is incredibly meaningful. And sometimes it crosses, you know, what we don't want to do. But I mean, I was thinking, you know, Aaron, how many times have you bathed your child or cleaned a snotty nose or
a blowout diaper?
That's right. You know, like those things get, you know. But it's caring for someone else. And in those moments, I think that love trumps ick.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Because you are bringing I like that word, dignity, to another human being. And I think that one of the big acts of Jesus's love is that Jesus brought dignity to us. Jesus showed us that we all matter and that we are all worth having our feet cleaned.
Right. I wonder what this scripture would mean if we changed part of the wording to they will know that you are my disciples by the way that you are willing to get messy, or by the way that you are willing to offer dignity. Mm-hmm. You know, replace the word love with those phrases. What would that call us to do? Like, if my love is measured by the length to which I'm willing to get messy or offer people, a homeless man, a person who's different from me, dignity, I don't know if I'm measuring up or not. I don't know if I'm known by that kind of love.
Well, I mean, that's part of why I said this sounds so simple, but I don't know that it is. We very clearly still struggle with how do we love one another? And not just by physically caring for one another, but, you know, in word and deed. You know, as I stated in my Bible background, if the only identification that I am a follower of Christ is the way that I treat each other or the way that I treat others, well, then today wasn't a good day for me.
Yeah.
But,
and we've all had those days.
Yeah. And so, you know, the fact that I love a good foot washing service and you don't, that's all right.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen you and so many others share love in beautiful ways, and you know we all do that differently based on the context we find ourselves in.
I think that what Jesus is calling us to here is simple, but it is not easy.
Right.
You know,
that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
It is the simplest thing in the world. It is care for another.
Mm-hmm.
It is show love in whatever way that you are able to show love. And I think that it means that we have to let some things go. We have to let our pride go. We have to let our ick factor go. We have to, we have to humble ourselves in the way that Jesus did and become the servant. Sometimes that means things like checking our gag reflex and helping a homeless man change his shoes.
Right.
Sometimes it means checking our pride reflex and saying, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes stepping outside of our comfort zone and letting other people into our space that we might not want in our space to begin with.
Right.
Yeah. I so wish Jesus had just said, just as I have loved you, you should also love me.
Oh, that'd be so much easier. That'd be so much better.
Yeah. But
like I can love Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. We got that down. But
right.
Man, it's the loving the other people part that's so tough.
My brother is a church kid, and so he loves to say, and he doesn't regularly attend church these days, and he'll say, oh, I love Jesus. I don't like his fan club. I have a picture of love in my head, Nikki, since you said that. A couple of months ago, and we all know that in this place where we are with political climate and all that kind of stuff that's going on, there's a lot said about a lot of different groups of people. And a lot of it is not caring or compassionate. Mm-hmm. And here in Macon, where I live, I think it's called the Islamic Center of Middle Georgia. There was some vandalism to that center. And across the side of the building, just some horrible things were spray painted. And some people that were not caring took credit for that. And so how do we respond to that? And my first thought was, oh my God, what can we do?
Right.
And there's no way to undo that. But what a lot of Christians in our community decided to do is the next time they met for worship, they met and they showed up with signs of solidarity. And it was Christians of like a million different denominations. And it was such a beautiful thing to me to show up and to protect these people as they were going in. Mm. Like, we can't undo what's done, but love shows up. And just to offer them some dignity.
And safety. Yeah.
And to some, I mean, maybe to some people it looked sort of like a protest, but I think it was this idea compelled them that people will know that we're Christians by our love, by our showing up for our neighbors.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Erin, that in that instance, what I believe showed everyone that you were Christ's disciple was not being this defender of the Christian faith. I'm going to, you know, spray paint whatever on the wall of the Islamic Center and tell all those Muslims that they're going to hell. What showed that you were a follower of Jesus was by exhibiting some of his love and sharing some of his love with people who are markedly different from from you. And again, it's I love what you said, Nikki. I believe you said it's simple, but it's not easy. You know, it's not an easy thing to get up enough courage to wash someone's feet or to protect them as they go to worship in a way that's very different from the way you do. Mm-hmm. But Jesus doesn't give us a lot of wiggle room here. He doesn't say when you're feeling good about it or when it fits with, you know, the kind of day you're having, but you also should love one another. It's pretty clear.
I think love is really messy all the time. In our work, in our Christian practice, we like to keep things, I like to keep things neat and orderly and predictable.
Controllable?
And controllable.
Is that a word?
It is now. But yeah, I think that we like to keep things in neat little boxes where we can know what's going to happen and we can hold control of it. And the kind of love that Jesus shows us is constantly pushing those boundaries. There's no ability to control the kind of love that Jesus showed us. It is powerful and amazing, and it's, you can't control it and you can't predict it. I don't know. I think that the kind of love that God calls us to is messy.
I think it is because love changes things. I mean, folks, frankly, that I don't know well or love, that their capacity to hurt me is pretty low. The folks who hurt us deeply are those whom we love most dearly.
Mm-hmm.
And love changes things, but for me at least, it's inescapable that this love that we have for one another, that's who we were called and created to be. You know, as messy as it may be, or as hurtful as it can be, that's who we were created to be, and that's where life happens.
You're right. I like to know, okay, how deep do I have to get into this?
Yeah.
Right. You know,
how much time do I invest? That kind of thing. Well, our model is Christ, and it was the ultimate risk, the ultimate vulnerability. So I have to tell you, I have a song running through my head because I recently got to go with my mother to a concert. Sandy Patty. Whoop. She is on her farewell tour. If anyone knows so who sad. Sandy Patty is, oh, bless all of our hearts. She can still sing the roof off the place.
Oh, she always could.
And my mom was beside herself and bought tickets for my sister and I and her to go. I mean, it might as well have been in the Beatles. She was so excited. So we go to the concert. And of course, the song that my sister is reminding me, okay, you better have your sign language ready. Love in Any Language.
Love
and
it.
So I was waiting the whole concert for this song. And about halfway through, of course, she sings this song. And she comes down off the stage and the house lights come up so everybody can see each other. And she says, sing with me now. And everyone's singing along, Love in Any Language. And I'm looking around and I'm not going to lie. This is a very not diverse crowd, like the opposite of diversity. Lots of gray hairs, lots of sweet white faces. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm listening to these folks sing, and I'm singing along too. I mean, you totally have to get
you
into
have
it.
To.
I mean, my mother may or may not have been doing the sign language to the song that we learned in 1993. Love in Any Language. Everybody's just singing their hearts out, and I'm thinking, what if it really was in any language? Like, what if this whole room was just as diverse as we possibly could be, culturally and traditions and, you know, sexual orientations and political views. I'm thinking that's probably was not the case in that room, if I had to sit here and judge. But what if it was? I don't know. That cheesy song would mean so much more to me. Mm. And now it's stuck in your heads. You're all welcome.
Yeah, I'm totally singing it. But you know, like, there's that line in the song about a daddy's love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, as cheesy as it is, I think that it is true that love communicates across all boundaries, that you don't have to have the same language to show somebody love. You don't have to have the same political affiliations to care and love for one another. And a lot of times we let those boundaries get in the way. We let those things be deterrents from showing love to one another. But that's not the language of love. That's not the way that love works. And so they don't have to be. They don't have to be things that keep us from caring for and loving one another.
You're right.
Sandy Patty knew what she was talking about all
so
along.
So love in any language.
All along.
Well, it's been a lot of fun listening to this tonight. I have to say, this was not where I expected this to go, but it's actually been really good. And you know, listening to this conversation about how icky and gross the call that love calls us to be sometimes to deal with the things that seem icky and gross, and this conversation about whether or not it's hard to do or easy to do. I was reminded of a quote by Dwight Moody, who said, "Faith makes all things possible. Love makes all things easy." Mm. And maybe it is that these things that seem so gross and icky and terrible and hard to do become easy to do when we really do love as Jesus loved us.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. May we all find that kind of love this week. Thank you all for this good chat.
Thanks, David.
Thanks.
Thank you. This was fun.
Good night, y'all.
Good night.
Hey.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.